Hare Krishna. I'd like to start off by seeking blessings from all the senior devotees present here. From all the devotees present here, please bless me so I might be able to say something that will be adding value to your morning program. Both the key topics in this purport are something which are very, very difficult for me. I beg your pardon for having the audacity to speak on a purport like this or on the topics like this. The first is, you know, the importance of mourning, and the second is the hurdle of the impersonalistic mentality, the impersonalistic thought process. I was fortunate enough to go to Vrindavan Gurukul, and for almost 13 years, 6 days a week, every day, we were there for Mangalarti. But, I still not got used to it. The material perspective would be, if someone's doing it, we tell people you do it for 1 month, you'll be able to do it forever. After 13 years, if you're still not being able to do it, then clearly there's something more than just there's something more than just material considerations here. And the second one is the impersonalism, which is very deep rooted in the modern world. In the material world, impersonalism is the biggest hurdle of spiritual life. And it is a hurdle that stays with us for a very, very long time, can stay with us for a very, very long time. So I wanted to say a little bit about both these things. We have a beautiful example in the audience who's been coming to Mangalarti here at Bhaktivedanta Manor almost since the day he was born. I will not say the name, but he's still here, whereas I'm not, so all glories to you. Today everyone is speaking about the importance of mourning and how if you can take advantage of the morning, then there's health benefits, there is, you know, mindful benefits, there is benefits to how the rest of the day goes. And the same principle is, you know, being emphasized here, that the morning part of the day is the time which is very important for one's spiritual life. Gopal Krishna Maharaj, he, at least I hear from some of the disciples, that he would emphasize the morning program as an absolute important practice. Grihastha or non-grihastha, brahmachari, importance of morning program. He would say, if you can just do the morning program, for 12 years, anything you say from your mouth will become perfect. Krishna, there's many aartis, there's about 6 aartis in the day. And every aarti has got a name. Shayan aarti, Shringar aarti, Rajbhog aarti. But the morning program, the morning aarti is called Mangal aarti. It is not called, you know, Uttan aarti, the waking up aarti of the Lord. It's called Mangala aarti because the source of all auspiciousness is in that morning. The mode of goodness is most prominent in the morning. And therefore, what we're trying to do in our spiritual practices, through all different, whether whatever part of the day, we're trying to imbibe the mode of goodness more and more. Because it is from the mode of goodness that we can step forward, bypassing the material energy and step into Vishuddha Sattva, step into pure goodness. So, if you think of it from a mathematical point of view, you need the greatest portion of the mode of goodness in your life. Otherwise, the other two options are the mode of passion or mode of ignorance. Material energy is only three modes. If you don't have more and more, or if at least as spiritual practitioners, if you're not putting more and more goodness in our lives, then the balance will be taken up by passion and ignorance. That is the principle that Krishna speaks about in the Gita, that these three modes are competing. They're competing for taking over you. Yes? So they're competing to take over you. What we can do is actively try to increase the mode of goodness and decrease the mode of passion and ignorance. That's spiritual practice. That's what we try to do. We decrease the mode of passion and ignorance and increase the mode of goodness. What the morning hours offer us is an opportunity to fill ourselves with the mode of goodness. Otherwise, the competition is on. You're the ball, and the competition is between goodness, passion, and ignorance. So that's why it's so important, just from this consideration, that we try to take advantage of the morning hours. Then Krishna also goes on to say that the mode of goodness, the mode of passion and ignorance are definitely in the time of the day, but they're in what you eat, they're in what you, your modus operandi of work, they're in your relationships. Everything is got a combination of the three modes of material nature. And that's why spiritualists, it's not like, okay, we wake up in the morning and then the rest of the day it's Netflix and everything else. We are constantly battling the modes. And all day, the spiritual practice is there to keep putting passion and ignorance to a side and fill up with the mode of goodness. And what's better than coming and taking darshan of Krishna? That's stepping into Vishuddha Sattva. That's taking you even beyond the mode of goodness. So Archana, that Brahmaji, it's very interesting that Brahma and this Prabhupada is bringing forth the morning program in the morning of Brahma's waking up, or in the morning of Brahma's appearance. Morning means beginning. So when Brahma is awake, is on the lotus flower, he's taking darshan of Krishna, whose eyes are open. And Prabhupada is bringing forth the whole morning program into this. But that's such a beautiful comparison. Anything we do, anything we start, is the morning of that activity, is the beginning of that activity, and therefore you start with Krishna. You buy a new house, there's samskars we do because you're adding Krishna. It's the beginning of the use of that facility. Education, you're beginning education, nursery, year one, there's a samskar, vidyarambha. You begin with Krishna. You begin with Krishna. And that kind of guarantees the success of that activity. Brahma has got the responsibility of creation. So he's also starting with archana. He's starting with worship, taking darshan of Krishna. And his vision is the vision of lotuses. You know, Kunti Devi is glorifying Krishna, the vision of lotuses. His vision is also a vision of lotuses. Navel is like lotus. Eyes are like lotus. So he's seeing Padmanabha. Here it is said, Nalininekshanaya. Eyes like the lotus. So starting with darshan is the best thing to do, is the success of the day. Now, whatever else happens in the day, you know, is God's will. But at least taking darshan in the morning of Krishna is the success. Whatever happens thereafter, You know, we used to hear that a teacher was trying to tell his students the importance of doing the most important things as a priority. So he once came to his class and he brought a big glass vessel, and then he gave them, you know, different size stones. And he said, "I want you to put these, everything in these jars should fit into this, in big container." So they all tried, you know, different combinations. And then he told them that, well, he showed them. He put the big stones in the jar first, shook it around, they all settled. Then he took the second size, and like this, right to the end where the sand. So if you put the sand in first, and then the medium stones, and then the big stones, there's no chance that they will fit into that container. There has to be a certain process to make everything fit in that container. So he started with the big stones, then the medium size, then the small, and then finally the sand. And the sand then seeped into, you know, every crevice, every corner. And that was a full, everything fit into that container. So he was telling them that in life also, what's the most important should be done first. If we can put the morning program, if we can put darshan of Krishna or sadhana as a priority in life, that big stone is in place. Everything else will fit in the sides. Everything else will fit if the big thing is there. For a spiritualist, what is the biggest thing? The sadhana is the biggest thing. You know, prasadam can fit in the corner. If you make prasadam the big thing, then sadhana won't be able to fit in the corner. It'll be out of the box. The second kind of main principle this purport is talking about is this impersonal mentality. The impersonalists cannot comprehend the importance of archavigraha. They cannot understand worship. They'll do all other types of weird worship. You know, why I say weird is because they think our worship doesn't make sense, but their worship needs a manual this size to explain what they're doing. Krishna says in the Gita, "Klesha dikkataraste sham avyakta sakta cheta sam avyakta ahigatir dukkham dehavad bhiravapyate." Their practice is very difficult. Their practice is full of suffering. Their practice is very difficult to perform, and to reach success in their practice is very difficult as well. It is possible, Krishna does not deny, but he says every part of the practice, the beginning, the middle, the end, all difficult. Dukkha means suffering. That is the impersonal path. On the other side, Krishna says, "Tasyaham sulabha partha nitya yuktasya yoginaha." That spiritual path is sulabha, very easy. Susukham kartum avyayam, it is joyfully performed. So as opposed to waking up in the morning, chanting Hare Krishna, taking darshan and dancing, and then feasting, Krishna is saying you're better off doing this, whereas the other path is very, very difficult. There's a few different kind of aspects to understand this impersonal practice, impersonal kind of aspiration. Some people, and Prabhupada writes in the purports in other places, that sometimes the impersonalists are also seen worshipping. But their worship is also ultimately to use that worship as a platform to get to the impersonal understanding. So that worship is offensive. And other aspects which for a devotee, especially in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, kaivalyam narakayate, our acharyas say that it is actually hellish. Impersonal practice, impersonal life, impersonal mode of thinking is hell. Hellish. It is the biggest or the strongest enemy of devotion is impersonalism. You know, we generally have Shunyavadi, we have Mayavadi. And then we have the demoniac. The impersonalist is the worst. Because someone may not know, but someone who knows and still has a very cold kind of reciprocation with you is the worst type. Right? You have friends, you have enemies. But that friend who becomes an enemy is the worst. So that is impersonalism. Worship of Krishna, Archa is Archa avatar. The deity is an avatar. Narasimha, Ram, we know these avatars. But Archa, Vigraha is also avatar. It's an incarnation who comes and lives with you. In your house, some people, because they don't have much facility, they may be in a studio flat. In the bedroom only they have altar. So Krishna is living with you in your bedroom also. So this is the avatar of Krishna. And to completely not be able to understand, because of this materialistic thinking or the impersonalistic thinking, Prabhupada says here, materialistic is material. Impersonalistic is material. Impersonalists are always thinking backwards. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, there is description of the person in the mode of goodness, in the mode of passion, in the mode of ignorance. The mode of person in the mode of goodness knows what is to be done, what is not to be done. Person in the mode of passion is not sure what is to be done, what is not to be done. The person in the mode of ignorance, he thinks he knows what is to be done and he always does the wrong thing. He always does the opposite to what is right. So Krishna and Prabhupada are saying, impersonalists always think backwards. They always get it wrong. And then there is examples of impersonalists, or what we say, the Brahmavadis, who can be very high-level spiritualists. The example of the four Kumaras, the example of Shukadev Goswami. But Krishna then has his way of intervening in their kind of thinking. There's a verse which explains how when the smell of the tulsi that was offered to Krishna entered into the nostrils of the Kumaras, they impersonally shed their impersonalistic thinking. Shukadev Goswami, when he heard the verses glorifying the soft-heartedness or the love or reciprocation of Krishna to the devotees, Krishna to the demons, that verse where Putana is described, how this Putana came to kill and yet Krishna made her the mother. When Sukadeva Goswami heard that, he shed his impersonalist mentality. Just yesterday we heard that one of the Vyas Puja offerings to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's godbrother OBL Kapoor was speaking, and he was saying that I was in Allahabad, and he's a professor, he's a PhD. He goes, and I was 200% convinced and fixed that my goal of life, Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanji ki jai, Gauranithai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna. Yeah, after seeing that, you say Krishna is impersonal. That's the biggest type of offense. So he was saying he was fixed, he was convinced, and he had made his life's goal reaching the impersonal Vedanta. He said he came, he heard from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and for about hour and a half, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was speaking, and he was constantly looking at OBL Kapoor, and he said in that offering that after that 1.5 hour, I completely give up the idea of Vedanta and impersonalistic thinking, and immediately I decided to become a devotee. Radhanath Swami was telling us that this was the offering that OBL Kapoor made. Jaranivas Prabhu, Pankajangir Prabhu, they were in Jagannath Puri, traveling, finding their, you know, spiritual path. They went to India, they met the devotees, and there was a construction of the cart going on, and they asked the devotees, "What are you doing? Because we're preparing for Rath Yatra. What's the Rath Yatra? Because are we going to take Krishna into the streets? Who's Krishna? He's the supreme personality of Godhead." I forget if it was Jananavas Prabhu or Pankajangir Prabhu who was telling us, but he goes, hearing the supreme personality of Godhead was a shock to their system, because everywhere they went, they were hearing Brahman, impersonal. They heard Krishna, Ram and all that, but they never heard it in this way. And just hearing supreme personality of Godhead, it kind of shattered the framework they had of God as being impersonal. And immediately they gelled with this principle of supreme personality of Godhead. So Krishna has his ways of intervening in the lives and changing the Brahmavadis, the devotees who may have a misconception. He enters and brings them to the path of personalism. We see it now, today, in our own kind of contemporary devotees. We hear it in the history books, we hear it in the Bhagavatam. So if someone has only been brought up with a particular path of understanding, then sometimes it may not be perfect, but that is fine. If they stick to their path with dedication, with the right mood, then Krishna has his ways of changing things. Krishna has his way of interfering in their lives. For all of us, I wanted to just kind of conclude saying that impersonalism is a philosophy, but impersonalism is a mentality as well. Like sin is an activity, but the tendency to sin is a mentality. Coming to spiritual life, we hear that as soon as you take darshan of Krishna, you circumambulate Tulsi Devi, you have prasad, sin is finished. Sin is burnt up. What is left is the tendency to sin. So when we take to Krishna consciousness, or when we take to initiation, we say, no, Guru takes everything, clean slate. What is left then in spiritual practice is purifying the tendency to sin. And similarly, what is left in spiritual practice for us is purifying the tendency of impersonalism. That is very difficult, because we may come in front of the Lord and shed the tears of devotion, but interacting with devotees, we may see, oh, this is a newcomer, long time to go. Keep at it, you know. You have to learn verses, a lot to do. So our tendency doesn't go very easily. This tendency has two forms, principally, that I can comprehend. First is the tendency of becoming hard-hearted, and the second is the tendency of sense gratification. Some people with jnana, with advancement, with having a lot of accolades, they become holier than thou. That is also one form of impersonalism, to become hard-hearted, and that's what the Mayavadis are. They're the jnanis. Their difficulty is hard-heartedness, and that doesn't allow them to become devotees. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Damodar Leela explains that Krishna, he's Makhan Chor because he loves butter. And why he loves butter is because butter has two qualities. Butter is very pure and butter is very soft. So if your heart is very pure, if your heart is very soft, then Krishna will steal it. You may make it very pure through all types of, practices, but if it becomes hard as a consequence, then Krishna will not enjoy it. Whereas if you become pure and you become very soft, then Krishna will accept it. The second problem is sense gratification. When you want to enjoy something at the cost of anyone else, that is also impersonalism. That is also a form of impersonalism. So the hardcore materialist who is after sense gratification, and supposedly the hardcore spiritualist who is completely opposite, like the purport is talking about, neti neti, if it's not this, it's completely the other side of the spectrum. Impersonalism lies in both places. And service to the devotees, service to the Vaishnavas, service basically is putting someone else ahead of you. Through service, we can give up this tendency of sense gratification. It's very difficult to enjoy when you're always thinking of how you can serve others. You're in the queue, last Rasgulla is left in the Rajbhog plate, and there's two devotees behind you. It's very difficult to enjoy that Rasgulla, because you'll feel that, are you? So you give it, because that's the service attitude. And that makes your heart very soft. You slowly lose the tendency for enjoyment when you learn how to serve. So hard-heartedness, desire for sense gratification, can be removed by practices of devotional life, which are service, jivdaya, harinam, and where is the third one? Naam Ruchi, Jivadaya, Vaishnava Seva. This is the mandate for all of us. Vaishnava Seva, Naam Ruchi, and Jivadaya. You cannot be impersonalist after that. At least the tendency of impersonalism, if tendency is not there, even if you are very impersonalist, like the four Kumaras of Shukadeva Goswami, because the tendency is not there, it takes a moment to change. Smell Tulsi Haribo. You come love of God. But if the tendency is there, then no matter how much Tulsi you eat, Charnamrit, you fight for the Tulsi leaf. Until tendency is there, it will not go. It will be very difficult to take directly to Krishna consciousness. So mercy is The other thing, final point I wanted to make, how to make the tendency of impersonalism go? I just did the Ramayana course, and one of the most amazing things I came across was when we read, because I had to kind of prepare for why Sita was banished to the forest. It's very hard to understand, very hard to kind of accept. So I was reading the explanation of this episode, and one of the most fascinating points I came across was one reason is to, or one benefit of reading these pastimes is in your heart you develop sympathy to that character. And when you develop that sympathy, it helps you break away from this impersonalistic mentality. It makes your heart soft. So for example, if you feel really sad that Sita Devi is being banished to the forest, then immediately you've developed great sympathy for Sita Devi. And that tendency is destroying the impersonalistic tendency in the heart. When you feel very happy, Hanuman's burning Lanka, it's giving you a connection. It's giving you something to meditate on about Hanuman. You immediately develop a relationship with Hanuman, and that destroys the impersonalist mentality. So I'll end there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna. We have a couple of minutes. If there's any questions or anything you'd like to ask, please, or any corrections, please feel free. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhuji. One question which is sometimes asked, that what's the need to do morning program? Because why do we need to do morning program at all? Because Lord Chaitanya has said, Nam Nam Kari Bhavdani Sarva Shakti Satrar Pataniyamita Smaranena Kala. There's no Kal, no Niyam. So, what should be the answer to this, Prabhuji?
Yeah, thank you. So, it seems like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying there's no rules required, and Prabhupada is giving us a lot of rules. Rules are there for an exercise of freedom. And therefore, rules are there for us to come to the platform of being able to enjoy the freedom or enjoy the taste of Nam Namakari Bahudani Sarva Shaktis. Right now, we may not have that mood. Because when, for example, you may hit your toe on the floor and Nam Nam will not come to your mouth, all the other curses will come to your mouth. So right now you need Nam Nam Akari Bahudani Sarva Shakti. You need regulations to come to the stage of Nam Nam. So then when the name comes, it will not only come when everything is good or when you want. Even in the most difficult of situations, then Nam will come. So if you think of it as, you know, following the red right rules on the highway, you think of it as you're following these rules so that Nam can become second nature. And then there is no rule, there's no time. Then even in bed, you've not bathed in, you know, if you're in an unfortunate situation in a hospital, you've not bathed for many days, you're eating only pills, you may be dirtying yourself, you can still chant name. Yeah? Is that okay, Prabhu? Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu. Govind Prabhu.
Just in relation to this question, just an anecdote, some of you may know it. Revati Nandana Prabhu asked Prabhupada, said, we're preaching late and we're not going to the morning program. Is this a problem? And then Prabhupada said, no, it's fine because you're preaching. But then Prabhupada said, but don't tell this to devotees. And he asked them why. He goes, because they're attached to the deities and they might take it the wrong way. He basically said, before he said that, he said, Pancharatrika Vidhi is helpful, but in this age, Bhagavad Marg alone is enough. But don't tell. So then they gave that, because they're attached to deity worship, they might take it the wrong way. Just thought I'd throw that in.
Yeah. It's the likes of us who've heard that pastime and we think, okay, even if I'm not waking up, it's okay. Dangerous. Dangerous.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the class. At the beginning of the class, you mentioned, maybe quoting Prabhupada, that after 12 years, whatever you say, whatever comes out your mouth,
Gopal Krishna
will be perfect. I think Prabhupada said 12 or 14 years as well, something like that. So what does that exactly mean?
I don't know. I've been doing for 13 years and still nothing happened. I suppose it means, at least what I understand it means, is you become that perfect, you know, Krishna says, Nimitta Matram Bhavasavya Sachin, you become a qualified candidate to be an instrument in the hands of Krishna. And why, when it says that everything you say will become perfect, is because that's Arjuna. The perfect candidate for being an instrument in Krishna's hands means when Krishna wind, you know, he uses the wand for something, that's perfect. It's going to be perfect. So I'm not so aware of the time, whether it's 12 or 13, or for all of us, many of us have been here 25 years. We still, you know, keep getting things wrong. But I think the goal for a spiritual person, especially in the mission of Prabhupada, is to be an instrument, to be a pure instrument. If you're on the mic, you want to be resonating the message of Prabhupada, not, you know, your own. And whatever you do, you want to be an instrument in the hands of Krishna. So I think it'll make you good quality instrument. Is that okay? Unless you want to share.
No, I was just thinking, you said that because you're so mind-controlled and self-controlled over such a period, so then whatever comes out is very controlled, is very specific of your mouth in terms of words, vocabulary. Right?
Possible.
Yeah, so that's what, on the other side, that's what I was thinking. And then from another perspective also, that you become so powerful in a sense that if you say some words, right, everything else has to follow those words.
Yeah. Right?
Meaning, if you curse someone, that curse will become true.
Yes.
But you're saying more, it's an action, you become an instrument of the Lord.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what we want, right? So that's what we would pray for. You know, if something's going to come out of my mouth, may it not be a curse, may it be the words that Krishna ordains for me to use in His service. But that's very possible, and that is the sadhana sampatti. The wealth of sadhana has the potency to come out in the form of a curse as well. The sages, they don't personally do any more. You know, like Sobari Muni cursing Garuda, he's not kind of standing there with a trident waiting for every time Garuda comes. The whole kind of prakriti moves according to the curse. So that potency is there, you know. Parikshit Maharaj is being cursed. What did the boy do? He just said, but he used his sadhana sampatti for cursing. We don't want to calculate our sadhana as sampatti, as wealth, because mathematics, wealth means it can be used. Why would we use our spiritual wealth for curse or for an advantage? Oh, Krishna, get me that 5-bedroom house. Krishna very easily can do it, you know, but why you use your sadhana sampatti for material sampatti, material wealth? So we try not to think of our sadhana as sampatti, or even 10 years, 5 years. the tendency is what matters, and that's what we want to take away. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for the class. My understanding was that by following regulative principles, one can gradually adjust and amend those tendencies. But at the same time, we see that even after long periods of practicing, those tendencies still remain unchanged. Can you maybe share something on that?
The tendency to change is not possible from our own side. The tendency can only be done by divine intervention. And that tendency and that mercy is what we are praying for. Perhaps the materialist or the impersonalist doesn't pray for that mercy. You know, our whole kind of mood of chanting is also not to become spiritually powerful. The mood of chanting is a calling out for help from Krishna. So tendencies change, at least from observation, not just through practices. To change tendencies, it's got to be done through divine intervention. Now, just from the example of the Kumaras or Sukadeva Goswami, it is not that they had knowledge of beyond what we can even comprehend. Their knowledge standard was much higher. Their spiritual practice standard is much higher. Yet the tendency was there. Only when divine intervention took place, then it changed the heart. So it's not that Sukadeva Goswami didn't know that verse from the Bhagavatam. When his spiritual Vyasadev sent the devotees to get Sukadeva Goswami, he said, "You will see him. You please chant these verses very loudly." One was glorifying the beauty of Krishna, Viraha Pidam Natavaravapu, Karanayo Karunikaram. And the other was glorifying the kindness of Krishna in that verse with Vatputana. So that divine intervention was not that he didn't know that, he knew that verse. But through the instruction of Vyasa, through the mouth of the devotees, when it entered his heart, it did something else in the heart. It shattered the Brahma conception. So divine intervention is what we call out for to change the tendency of impersonalism. Is that okay? Yes, Mataji. Yeah, it's just because there's people online.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you for that class, Prabhu. I was just wondering, in regards to the impersonal dimension, because even in yesterday's lesson, there was this aspect of having a lot of empathy and compassion for another. And my question to that is, as people that are practicing whatever they may be practicing, but especially within Krishna consciousness, how is it that you can have compassion for someone, feel what they feel, but not take it on as your own, and not allow it to stop you from doing the things that you need to do, because it can be very, very heavy. I would love to know that, please.
I think our mode of compassion is carrying the compassion of Krishna. So we are also instruments of compassion. We don't think this is my compassion. Oh, look, when I saw someone, with the baby homeless, I shed the tear and see my heart is so pure, so much compassion is there. That's not our kind of mode of compassion. Our mode of compassion is being an instrument of the compassion of Supreme Lord. And how we can then best be an instrument of compassion for that particular person. So if our going into a situation is with that mentality, then also what comes in reciprocation will not be a burden to us. It will be something we are also passing to Krishna. Yeah?
In what way do you mean?
If the burden that we take from someone is naturally, it's a mental burden, right? Because their suffering, their difficulty may affect us as well, and that's why it's a burden for us. So that affecting doesn't happen when you see that you're just an instrument of compassion. Yeah? Until you feel that you will make a difference, naturally that burden will fall upon you because it will affect the mental state. But the mental stability of someone who genuinely feels that I'm just passing on the compassion that I get to help the other, there is no burden. Yeah? So like the guru also takes the sin of the disciple, but there's no burden if he is seeing that I'm just that via medium. I'm giving the connection that I got from my spiritual master to this person. So the burden also is passed back. It doesn't fall on the head. And my spiritual master used to say that I'm connected in parampara means I'm passing it back. The sin goes all the way back to Krishna, and that's where it is disposed, not on me. Yeah, I hope that's okay. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
If you're having any difficulties in your life or whatever it is, and the thing is the focus. And he says that whatever you're doing, what is the most important thing? And he says the most important thing is what you're doing now. And it's like in japa or in a bead bag. If you don't focus on those beads and go from one boat, you're all over the place. You can't follow. And you end up guessing where you are in that bag. And it's the same thing. And so, and yat kroshi dadasi yat, yat joosi dadasi yat. It says, whatever you do it for me. So you have to have that focus that actually it's not for me, it's for somebody else, somebody higher. And this way... what does it say? If we have an expectation, it's the mother of disappointment. You know, we just lose the plot, as they say. And it's like those adverts that come on during the YouTube. You know, if you get to this, we need your help. You've got to get off there quick. Because you're gonna lose the plot with the very nice lecture that's there. So that's what occurs to me in this. Okay.
Thank you, Prajana Prabhu.
Yeah.
Thank you. We've gone over time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai, Nitai Gaura Premanande, Hari Hari Bol, Hare Krishna.